were your living quarters like once you got into them? So you started with sharing a flat with Tony, and then what happened after that?
We got a two-bedroom apartment or flat. I think it was on Fortescue Avenue. And from what I can remember of it, he had to go on a waiting list. So when he applied for it, we got an upstairs flat, even though we had a dog.
Yeah.
And of course, we were just very, very happy to be given sort of anything. And it was only later that we got to know the township superintendent, Phil, was an English guy. He used to play football, and he said, "Why didn't you tell me that you had a dog? We would have given you a downstairs."
Yeah.
And we didn't want to sound greedy or ungrateful. And he said, "Why didn't you tell me you had a dog?" And anyway, next week, downstairs, because they had gardens.
They had a little garden,
For the dog.
What sort of dog was it?
An Afghan hound.
Oh my gosh, it's a big dog.
A big dog.
Continuously brush. But it was a bad place for an animal anyway, because we worked long hours.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we worked 10, 12 hour days. I tried to do most Saturdays as well, at least a Saturday,
not a
weekend. So it was very good for the dog.
So what was your flat like once you moved into it?
They were all tiled floors, fully furnished. All your basics, your fridge, freezer, I couldn't believe it, everything was there.
You had lounge suite and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, beds. And then Phil Leonard and
Bobby Warren.
And Bobby Warren on the side set up a carpet business. And of course everyone got at least their lounge room and their bedrooms carpeted.
Yes.
And the company allowed people to sort of customise
their house. They allowed you to do that. Because I think every flat was the same. Everyone tried to make theirs a bit different. So, yeah, we got carpet. Yeah, we put a few pictures on the wall, made it our own. And we were very happy in that flat. Very, very happy. Yeah. And very grateful. It was really good.
And at the time, just on the savings on your rental alone was putting the money into the bank, you know, so it was just a big win-win,
Joe, can you tell us about your job?
Sure, I finished a trade in Ireland as a motor mechanic. Mm-hmm. So as Ursa said earlier on, we went up, I didn't know where I was going to work. I had been at a HR department, and then I just got put in a car, and they drove me to the cat workshop and said, "This is your life from now on." And I'd never ever worked on the equipment before, but it was a fabulous challenge actually. It was great because I'd never worked on that type of equipment. I'd worked on mining equipment, but not as big as that. It was very different. It was hot. It was dirty. It was dusty. You know, when you get the easterlies or whatever winds they were that were blowing in, it was like a sandstorm on a regular basis. I was surprised. Well, I wasn't surprised, but basically I wore a t-shirt or a singlet and a pair of shorts and a pair of boots, and that was your uniform.
Yeah, exactly.
And they gave us a hat in the workshop. You could wear a bum cap, which was a bit lighter than the hard hat.
Were you on shifts at that stage?
No, I did permanent day shift.
Yeah.
I think on the back shifts there were just breakdown fillers and the likes, but most of the work was done in the days.
Yeah.
I was really interested. We did everything. I had two great foremen.
Yeah.
One of them was a Kiwi, and the other was of an Italian background.
Mm-hmm.
Very experienced guys and very helpful with it as well. And even though it was highly demarcated, it was something I was never really used to, where a foreman like that, he couldn't put his hand near a spanner or anything like that, or he'd be all sorts of, it'd be excommunicated.
Ructions.
So it was very
difficult. There was a bit of a union influence there, though.
Oh, huge, huge union. And I'd never been influenced by a union as much as that.
Yeah.
But be quite honest with you, it doesn't take you all that long to sort of fall into line.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, like when we were there, it was a three-panel shift roster.
Mm-hmm.
So most weekends, they finish shift and the day shift on Saturday, and didn't get back to work till, I think it was either Sunday night or Monday morning, something like that. So all the sports, everybody played sport, and there was a hell of a lot geared around the sport, whether it was football or soccer or AFL or VFL, whatever it was. And when the organisation, when Newman wanted to include the extra shift rosters to get extra production, there was a huge hue and a cry. I can't remember how many weeks we were on strike for. And I think everybody thought the sky was going to fall in. And it's like everything, you know, the mountain and the molehill, they come to the fore in the likes of discussions on things like that. But everybody thought the sky was falling.
I think that strike went for three months, Joe.
It was phenomenal. Mm. I know. And we were very lucky that the company didn't say, well, we're going to stop your payments. I mean, they didn't ask us for money for the... we weren't earning anything, but never asked for any money for rents or anything like that, you know. And maybe that was a good decision on their part. We never thought about it at the time.
Yeah. Anyway.
But I was only 23.
Yeah.
I mean, we were only kids.
We were the same age, yeah.
You know, we were only kids, and we were exposed to a lot of stuff. Met lots of people not too dissimilar in our age group, yes. I suppose, as well. A lot of inexperienced people just trying to find their way around, and you know, had gone to a place like Mount Newman because they all wanted to make a quid. But when the emotion gets stored and you think you're going to really forfeit something because of the shift roster, as I said, everybody thought the sky was going to fall in. And when everybody start working it and they saw the difference it made to their salaries. It was quickly forgotten. It was just watched like.
So that was the carrot, was it?
Ah, that was the carrot. That was a huge carrot.
So did you manage to work out your sports as well?
Oh, yeah. Initially, they allowed people to take time off, and everybody worked their way around it. Yeah, people were given time off to do it. A lot of the things that people thought would happen didn't actually happen, you know. Yeah. And there was big, you know, there was only ever enough for four teams from our perspective, from a soccer perspective. And we relied on the contractors.
Yeah.
If you didn't have the contractors out there, you wouldn't have had, you know, a team. So we were very, very, very lucky. But when you think back, and I'm sure a lot of people who used to work for Mount Newman Mining Company, when they think back, they probably think, you know, the things that you did when you were young and naive. Like everybody looks back at it and they say, gee, you wouldn't do that now, you'd probably castigate somebody for doing stuff like that.
That's right.
Very different, very different.
Oh, that's very interesting, actually. Did the strike affect you too, Ursula?
No, because I didn't have a job with the mine at that time. I went out to the contractor's camp and I applied there.
Was that the con camp?
SRAM.
Oh, SRAM. Okay.
And everybody had to have food.
So I did the lunchtime. And I was at the Bain Marie, and the contractors had all lined up with their plates, you know, like prisoners.
Yeah.
Plop, 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 there's your food, off you go.
Yeah.
In the meantime, I was still going up to HR twice a week, and then I got the job. So that strike didn't affect me.
I can't remember now, when the strike was on, were they still serving food? Or I mean, when we were at work, we used to have a 20 cent...
Yeah,
you get a bucket of tickets. Mess. Yeah, for the mess. You'd have lunch for 20 cents. I mean, people still complain about it. And the shovel operator would be complaining because he's the summer shining in his eyes.
Yeah.
The curtain wasn't straight in the truck.
But they'd stand the bloody thing down, and then it was a fitter equipment. I remember I was in a service truck, and I remember going up onto a shovel and saying to the guy, well, geez, if you think that I'm going to shift that for you, you've got another thing coming. And sometimes it got as pathetic as that. But then, if those guys, in my opinion, had been managed better, they probably wouldn't have done half the crap they did, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of things, you know, everybody aspired to have a white hat.
Yes.
So some of the guys that put into those white hat positions weren't capable of doing it as well. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, and sometimes it's very difficult to understand how people got appointed and the way they got appointed. So.
What were the other hats?
Green hats were electricians.
Oh.
Orange hats were engineering. Yellow was production, from what I can remember.